If I knew you were coming, I'd have baked a cake.
Adam Lepp!
Well, hello out there, folks in Radioland. Adam Lepp here. Yes, they do sing my name, but I have a talking voice, as you can tell, not a singing voice, so I'll let the jingle singers do their jingling, and I'll just do my yapping. I'm actually quite adept at yapping, to put it mildly. Instead of baking a cake, here's a hint as to my guest today. The first time he's ever been on my program, but he is a veteran morning caller, and instead of baking a cake, let's bake a potato. Is that a hint? Let me see here. Here's my next hint, this gentleman again. I'll say he's probably the oldest 22-year-old that I know. I'm not going to really make any numbers here, but he's intriguing because, I mean, he always has something interesting to say. He's been quite generous in sending out gifts to people at the station. In fact, he even sent me out a gift, which was quite cool and quite appreciated. So let's try to find this guy here because, you know, he's out there in the land where they grow potatoes, which, of course, is Idaho. And although my voice does travel pretty well, it doesn't travel that well. Let me try to echo it across the Grand Canyon and the Rocky Mountains. Calvin! Are you there, Calvin?
Yep, I'm here. Good morning, Adam.
So did you like the way that I summoned you out there in Idaho?
Yes, it's very effective.
I could also try to use my lack of singing ability and sing that song from the B-52s, You're Living in Your Own Private Idaho, which is one of my favorite B-52 songs. But if we keep joking about that stuff, we'll never get to our program. And I can assure you, boys and girls, this is going to be one of the best programs. Sort of, Calvin, I've borrowed you from the morning program. Don't quite understand how you call Scott at 5:30 a.m. your time when it's 8:30 here, but you do manage to do that. As I mentioned, you are living currently in Idaho, but you are a native of the Columbus area. So for those who don't listen to Scott's program, probably not a lot of people in that category, because even I listen. Tell us a bit about yourself, Calvin, and also tell us how you ended up migrating from the capital city of the Buckeye State to Western Idaho.
So I'm 22. Present day, I work at a paper mill here in Lewiston. I am a shop steward for my union, the United Steelworkers, but the story of how I ended up out here. So, my dad got a job out here, and at the time, it was going to require him to transfer to Pullman, Washington, which is about a 30-minute drive from Lewiston, Idaho. And at that time, I had just totaled my first car and spent the insurance check plus most of what I had in my savings at the time on the car that I have now. And then also being type 1 diabetic and not on my own insurance yet, I was in no way financially capable of staying in Ohio and, you know, starting out with my own place there yet. So it's kind of a you can't beat them, you join them type situation, plus a change of scenery never hurts.
We'll say Idaho is a beautiful state. I actually considered going to grad school in the Moscow, Idaho area, in that city across the border in the state of Washington. It didn't end up going, but can't beat the scenery. Definitely a different way of life. Cost of living is pretty good. The weather, you think the weather here is crazy. Well, it's a little crazier there, but you look out your door and you see mountains, and you probably see some members of the animal kingdom that you're not used to seeing here in Ohio. So, a change of scenery.
Oh, yeah, there's always deer and animals going through my backyard, and a couple days ago I was working in the garage, and this random turkey just starts walking down the driveway and stands there looking at me.
Turkey's lucky it wasn't Thanksgiving. Adam Lepp here on The Talking Place, WGH Talk Radio, WWGH1071.com on your internet browser. And we are speaking with Mr. Calvin Williams from Lewiston, Idaho, a regular participant in the Scott Spears Radio Morning Interviewer to the Stars extravaganza. So we thought we would borrow him. I've checked it out at the library. There is a date due on your forehead stamped, Calvin, for 2 weeks, so I'm allowed to borrow you for at least a 14-day 14-day period. And again, this has come up before, something which I think mesmerizes myself and Scott. Obviously, as a radio person, Calvin, I'm interested in voices and how people express themselves. And you've certainly been told this so many times, you're probably tired of hearing about it. So we'll just say it again, because a little ad nauseum never really hurts. You sound much more than your age. You were actually born a few days after 9/11, which is quite surreal, out of lack of a better term. Has your voice always been more mature sounding? I just kind of think of you being 10 years old and still kind of being the oldest 10-year-old at the school and sounding like you could be one of the teachers. But then we've also seen where people have a really high voice when they're young, and then suddenly their voice deepens, almost like overnight. I remember going to school with a few people like that. My voice didn't change all that much. I've listened to actually tapes of myself, because at your age I was working in radio. And I didn't sound much different. I would say I sound better now. I have a more mature voice, but you can still tell that it's Adam. Was that a little mesmerizing for you also, Calvin? Has your voice always been just more mature sounding? And what do you think you're going to sound like in 20 or 30 years? Do you think it'll continue to change a bit and get better or get worse? Or any thoughts on that at all?
I would say that I've probably sounded the way I do now since I've been about 10 or 11, and it hasn't really changed much since. I would say as I get older, my voice pitch would probably stay the same, but given the industry I work in and the things I do, you know, it might like raspier, maybe a little bit deeper, but I don't anticipate it changing a whole lot.
It's fascinating. As someone with a science background and a radio background, I guess this is a question that Scott probably has never asked you, as you and he have talked about a lot of things on the air. Just like when I interviewed Mary Ellen Withrow, I asked her questions that I don't think Scott had ever asked, even though they weren't crazy questions, they weren't offensive, they were just things that you might not have heard previously, but I thought they were important, and actually the answers were a bit surprising. So voices are an interesting thing, Calvin. Maybe you remember the Brady Bunch episode where they were trying to record a record, and Peter's voice kept changing, and they kind of worked that into the song. So the whole
I do remember that. Yeah,
I figured you kind of did. Now, of course, that show is 25 years older than you are, but as we've talked about, the way people express themselves and their lifestyle isn't necessarily proportionate with their age. As you know, our listenership...
No, not at all.
Yeah, our listenership tends to be older. Another one of our regular callers, Mr. Ted Jolliffe, he's 80-plus. Lee, actually, he's only a few years older than I am, which I guess would make him kind of in the late middle age category. So we do skew a bit older. Again, radio in general is more of a medium for middle-aged and older people. And nowadays, with all the other choices, whether they be through over-the-air or satellite or podcast, the younger audience probably doesn't skew toward an old-school talk station. But I think it's great that you are listening. We do have listeners who are school age. I guess that is the word, school age and higher. We have one host who's virtually the same age as you, one who's a couple years younger. So it's good to have that diversity. And all I can say, Calvin, is maybe that will rub off on other listeners and other show hosts. As I said, I've borrowed you here. I've put the library stamp on your forehead. Of course, they don't still do that anymore. But when they did, because that's what happened when I was in elementary school, they take the little stamper and stamp the book. So we're going to stamp your forehead and have you borrowed on the Adam the Computer Guy mid-morning afternoon coffee break radio show extravaganza from the great Interviewer to the Stars, Mr. Scott Spears. Do you find, Calvin, that our station is one of the best talk stations around? You mentioned how unique it is. It has a special place for you, which we think is great. Did you see that uniqueness?
Yeah,
some people have compared us to public radio, to NPR. What are your thoughts on that?
So I would say the charm that I find with WGH is the fact that it's, you know, a small little local-owned talk station with local host that you could call into and talk about anything. It's not one of those big corporate cookie cutter stations that's owned by iHeart or Clear Channel, where they all kind of follow the same script and do the same thing regardless of what market the station is located in. It just has that personal touch makes it more meaningful.
Yeah, I'm not a corporate person at all, as you know. I like to do my own thing. That's what America was founded on. And we have some great, great, unique content. The plethora of Scott's shows, Adam's show, which I think is at least halfway decent, but I'm not going to let myself make that judgment. Let you and other listeners do that. Linda, radio veteran, always a good thing to say. Never at a loss for words, and just a great lady who does many things for us behind the scenes. Sean and Terry with their contributions. Sean, like myself, can be kind of surprising at what he says, and often what he does utter is of the humorous variety. And as you know, you really won't go more than 2 or 3 minutes without hearing a wisecrack out of my mouth. So we allow the humor to always be a part of the structure of a program. Well, we hope that after someone listens, Calvin, he or she will come away a little smarter and a better mood than when he or she started tuning in to said station. Plus, we provide great news and weather. I'm not going to pat myself on the back, but, you know, weather's important. And here in Ohio, we've already seen four seasons sometimes in the course of a couple days. But I do enjoy the fun of that. Before we get to the scheduled topics, Calvin, because if we don't do that, we will never have time, but we can always do a second show, so that's okay. How do you compare the weather in Idaho with the weather in Columbus? Do you like the weather better? And the mountain air, is that better for your health? Tell us what you think about that, because the last time I've been to that part of the country would have been a family vacation, and that would have been back in the 70s.
So I will say the weather out here, the winters are more extreme and the summers are more extreme than Ohio, but it's also a lot more stable. We don't really have the whole four seasons in a matter of 2 hours crap out here. But for example, the winters here, we get so much snow that there's markers on the sides of the road that are 5 or 6 feet tall that are to indicate where the road is. There's designated points for you to pull off to the side and put on tire chains. And then in the summer, it hits 110 plus degrees out here. However, the humidity is so low, it's a dry heat. So 105, 110 out here feels like what 85 would feel like back in Ohio.
I think with my hay fever, it's healthy also, but it's mountain air, and it's beautiful. We have mountains in southeastern Ohio. West Virginia is the mountain state. Certainly Kentucky and other parts of the southeast have mountains. But it just is different being in that part of the country near the Rockies, the water.
Yeah.
The cost of living, I would imagine, is rather low there. Especially, I mean, everything is going up at this point, but or is it? Maybe I know gas is more money, but in terms of real estate, groceries, how does that compare? How does that compare?
So the cost of living out here is actually much, much higher. So gas out here, we're close enough to California that we get their stupid gas prices as a side effect of that. The cost of homes out here is astronomical. So the house that we have right now is probably 3/4 the size of the one we had back in Ohio, but it's probably 2.5 times the price that we originally paid for the house back in Ohio. And the city I live in, Lewiston, is actually the highest taxed city in the state of Idaho.
Right. Yeah, I wasn't quite sure. Lewiston, interestingly, if you look it up, has about the same population as Marion, but certainly is in a more remote surrounding. Marion, not far from Delaware, Columbus, Bellefontaine, Lima, or even Toledo or Detroit. So there are plenty of things to do in Marion, but just a short road trip will take you to larger cities or similarly sized cities with other great and historic things to do. So just because an area is more remote doesn't mean that it's necessarily less money. And also living there with the rugged terrain and the extremes and the weather, you have to make sure you have a compatible vehicle, as a four-wheel drive and a vehicle in good shape is certainly advisable, especially in the winter if you plan on doing some traveling. So a different lifestyle altogether, but can't beat the beauty and can't beat the things you learn every day just by getting out into nature. Adam Lepp here on The Talking Place, WGH Talk Radio.
So one thing out here that's kind of a culture change from living in Ohio, you're driving out on the roads here. It doesn't even have to be the highways. It can just be the local city roads in town. You'll see signs that say game crossing. Like, I could be driving to work, and there'll be a random elk that just walks across the road. I've seen cows standing in the middle of the road, and it's crazy.
So game crossing does not mean that a Nintendo set or a PS5 is going to be sitting in the middle of a lane. It actually means animals, not Homo sapiens. So it could be a cow or some other member of the animal kingdom. Certainly different, a bit of a culture shock, but many things to appreciate. Adam here on The Talking Place with Mr. Calvin Williams, a regular caller to the Scott Spears program, whom we are borrowing to talk about first a little of his background and then the part of the country that he now hangs his hat in, which would be Idaho. And we're going to talk also about his job, and that's actually quite fascinating. With my science background, I'm interested in materials, recycling, which is a large part of his job, and the fact that people may not realize that items produced in or near where Calvin punches his time clock, so to speak, can be used right here in Ohio. Also going to try to talk some politics. We may not have enough time for that, but if we do, we will let people be aware of some of the issues and controversies that come up during conversations. And as we like to say, you may want to throw something at your listening device, or you might want to say, well, these guys are really smart and I agree, or maybe somewhere in between. Makes it more fun. So, Calvin, you work, I believe, at a paper plant. And paper is a fascinating field because people don't read books as much as they used to. Combination that some people, kind of addicted to video games and other things that may not be the most intellectually stimulating items, but that you can read a book on your tablet, other type of computing device. You don't necessarily have to buy paper book with a hardback, and as I said, the stamp from the library saying when it's due. Your employer, Calvin, is more into making things like bathroom tissue and paper towels, which will never go out of style. Tell us a bit about your job and I guess a little more about how you got the job, and also about maybe a little bit general stuff about the recycling process. And as I mentioned, the fact that if you go to a store here in Ohio, you very well might have be purchasing a product made at your plant or another one in that part of the country.
So when I got the job at the paper mill just a little over 2 years ago, it'll be two years and 2 months. As of tomorrow, actually, I had just quit my job at the local Chevy dealership because our service manager at the time was incompetent, and the way that they were wanting us to scam and upsell customers morally, I could not participate in that anymore. So I applied at the paper mill, admittedly for poops and giggles, because the starting hiring rate for new hires was already more than I was making at the time. I did not at all expect to get this job, but I got the invitation to interview within a week of applying, and then 2 weeks later I'm going through new hire orientation. So what I do there, I'm a wrap line operator. So what I do, I take the rolls of paperboard coming off the paper machines, and I wrap them to the customer's specifications. It could be paper wrap, or it could be stretch wrapped with cardboard corrugated headers on the ends of the rolls, and then put the labels on them and make sure everything is up to par before they get loaded into trucks or rail cars to be shipped out to the customers.
So the paper process.
And then on top of that.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
So And then on top of that, I'm also a union steward for the local, enforcing the contract and protecting myself and fellow coworkers, as well as being there as a resource to others that might have questions about the contract language or have issues going on that they need help with.
So as a union steward, as we've talked about off the air, you are one of the youngest union stewards. You would normally think a union steward, that's a tongue twister, isn't it? You would normally think a union steward would be someone middle-aged who's been at a union job for quite a while. Has that affected the way that you interact with your coworkers, with your managers, or do they see this is a sharp young guy, it's young blood, so to speak, and he will fight for us? He will make sure that our conditions, our salary, our benefits are great, and they've come to respect you. What kind of perspective do you have on that, as I'm sure that comes up all the time?
I will say a lot of people believe in me that I can make the changes that they desire, because I think the common belief is that the older folks who have been stewards since before I was born, potentially, might have gotten used to the messed up conditions and have grown complacent over the years, but they see me and they think, okay, he sees the issue, now how can he change it? What can we have him do for us?
So as the union steward, first, is that a paid position? Do you get any kind of compensation, even if it's not necessarily a salary or wage? And what exactly does a steward do? And tell us which union that you're in and what companies this union represents.
So the union I'm in is the United Steelworkers, and they represent the pulp and paper workers at my mill. We also have the IBEW for our electricians. So as a steward, what I do is I handle grievances and safety issues on plant, but most of what I do is just clarifying questions about the contract language and taking notes here and there.
And how did you get the steward job? Is there an election? What is the process? And your competitors, I presume they were older. Were there any females who applied? Tell us a bit about that process.
So for, at least with my local, to become a steward, you pretty much just have to express your interest, like say, like, hey, I want to be a steward. And they put you on the list as in training. And then you eventually attend the classes and stuff. And it is technically a paid position. Like, you don't, the pay is in the form of dues remittance. So instead of paying union dues, I get what I would be paying in union dues back as my payment for being a steward. And then we do not have any female stewards. The paper making industry is kind of a male dominated field. We have maybe a dozen females at my plant, and they're all in salary non-union positions, like working in the offices.
Yeah, that's another
customer service representatives.
Yeah, just another fascinating issue. Do you know why a lot of women don't choose that job? It's certainly recession-proof. There will always be toilet paper, paper towels, napkins, tissues, etc. Why aren't there more women? Would you like to see more women in the position? That, I guess, never really thought about that before, but while you're on the air with us and I'm asking my usual unexpected type questions, any thoughts on that, Calvin?
Honestly, I don't see why we wouldn't have more women working on the production floor, because a lot of the jobs that we have, anybody is capable of doing, and it's probably one of the best paying jobs that you can have with no college background and no degree. So I don't see why we don't have more female applicants.
Yeah, so
I certainly encourage it. Yeah, so.
If you're a neighbor's listening, if you're a female, apply. It's a great job, no matter what it says on your birth certificate. The pay is interesting. You are paid because union dues are something that union members do have to participate in. I used to do tech support for AOL back when AOL was used a lot and people dialed in and you had busy signals the first 10 times you tried to call. we were paid by getting a free unlimited membership. At that time, AOL, this was before you were born, but you probably heard about this, Calvin. AOL had a meter.
Yeah, I have.
You pay for every minute that you're on, and as a guide, that's what it was called, you would have unlimited free access, plus you'd have a little inside information regarding how emails were sent, etc. So you would learn quite a bit. It wasn't a big commitment, and it was fun. It helps your brain, helps me today in my business, knowing that I've helped people out, and I enjoy doing that. So kind of a similar situation. Speaking with Mr. Calvin Williams from Lewiston in Western Idaho on the Adam the Computer Guy mid-morning, afternoon, evening, coffee break, radio programming extravaganza on WGH Talk Radio. Calvin, again, being a regular caller to the Scott Spears program. He has sent gifts to myself, Mary Ellen Withrow, and Scott, which are greatly appreciated. Before we get to, let's go ahead and finish the conversation about your job. It is fascinating. Recycling is something that I am personally a bit of a crusader for. Paper, when possible, should be recycled, as should cans, bottles, and other recyclable items. The recycling process, Calvin, how does that enter into your manufacturing there at the plant? And what percentage of a lot of these papers that you manufacture there are recycled? And can you give a pitch to our listeners about, as I say, the importance of recycling?
So we don't really do recycling on plant per se, but a lot of the paper that we make contains a certain percentage of PCF, which is post-consumer fiber, which is recycled paper that we get in the form of bales from other paper mills, and then we feed those into our machines. And I believe most of our paper products, on average at least, contain about 30 to 40% PCF, depending on what the customer is wanting. And then the importance of recycling is, especially with paper, is just keeping that product in the system, you know, and reducing the need to chop down forests and trees. I mean, paper can be recycled almost endlessly.
So we do let people know if there is recycling where you are. Mary and Columbus have excellent recycling programs, as do most of the cities around here. Please do recycle. If you're not sure if something is recyclable, ask your neighbor if he or she is a participant in that, or just call the city or recycling place. And you might find that maybe paper that you had used a while back ends up being repurposed after recycling by a paper mill, such as the one that Calvin clocks in and out at. Before we get to other topics, Calvin, do you see yourself working not only at the paper company for next few years, as well as being a steward, maybe hoping for a promotion into management? Any thoughts about that at all?
So I have no intention on getting into management, only because when you go management and you go salary, you become a company man, and you lose your union protection. Working as an hourly employee in the position I do now, I have that protection and my job is secure.
Speaking with Mr. Calvin Williams from Lewiston, Idaho. So that union you're in, the steel workers, is powerful and has helped you. And as a steward, you're directly involved in the helping process. When you were in school learning about unions, was your opinion similar to the way it is now, or does one really have to be in a union to experience what they do?
So, I don't know if it's just me, but we didn't really have any education on unions in school. So, everything that I've learned firsthand since joining the union.
Best way is just on-the-job training, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, well, we appreciate that. Never really talked a lot about your job before, and doesn't come up too much on the show with Scott, so we want to provide information just from a perspective of someone who has a background living in this area, but now lives in a different part of the country. We are speaking with Mr. Calvin Williams, a regular caller to the Scott Spears radio program here at the Talking Place, and You and I became friends, Calvin, fairly recently, as you had obviously heard me participate in the show, participate in the top of the hour features. Initially, you had actually had a computer question for me, which is always appreciated. That
correct.
My brain is tickled, especially by someone who's a little more than a third as old as I am, which is kind of intriguing in and of itself. Tell us about the computer issue and how you and I kind of put our brains together and solved it. As well, we try to find a little bit of humor and a little bit of a learning process in any of these IT issues, and I think this one pretty much is the epitome of that kind of a process.
Yeah, so the computer issue that I was having, my computer would do this thing where overnight, while it's idle and I'm not using it, the clock on it would freeze up, and then everything would go unresponsive, and the only way to get it to come back up would be to do a hard reset by holding in the power button or just unplugging it. And I've had two local computer shops, one of them, which is called the Computer Guy, which is kind of funny, but they both took a look at it, and they were both stumped by it. And I've thrown pretty much every part imaginable at this computer trying to fix the issue. I've replaced the hard drive, I've done the video card, I've done the memory. And then Adam remotes into it from across the country, and in a matter of maybe 10 minutes, figures out that it's just a setting in the power settings that needed to be toggled a different way. And then now it's been working fine for over a week since.
So, yay, Adam. Of course, that would be myself. So I have taken care of an issue. And oftentimes we find, Calvin, that probably get a lot of the same logic at your work, or I know you like to work on cars and other mechanical things. Sometimes a fix is really something simple, so don't try to overthink it. And also make an inventory of the hardware. Since I had never seen your computer before, we did do some malware scanning and remove some extraneous programs. I did recommend a better power supply. Those things will certainly help. Those will likely exacerbate the issue with the power shutting off and the computer freezing. But this little minor setting, which really shouldn't even be necessary, sometimes that happens in some boards, some BIOSes, I guess that's the plural. And of course, these dreaded Windows updates can oftentimes cause these hiccups in the ability of technology to function. Well, we have about 11 minutes left here. Adam Lepp speaking with a very dedicated listener of the station that I've become friends with in the last week or two, Mr. Calvin Williams, living in Lewiston, Idaho. During our off-the-air conversations, Calvin, we talk a lot about politics, and that's always an interesting topic. One thing that's come up in the past is the interesting name of your former governor, Butch Otter, which in fact was the previous governor of Idaho. Current governor is also a fairly conservative Republican, although his name isn't quite as interesting. The politics there, Calvin, is, as we know from watching election results, the mountain states, state of Washington, Seattle is considered to be quite liberal, but the mountain cowboy states, Idaho, Wyoming, Montana, they're known as the Dakotas. They're known as being rather conservative. I would presume that didn't come as a surprise when you arrived there. The climate there, Calvin, are people excited about Donald Trump quite possibly resuming his presidential career? What is kind of the political climate there in what we know to be a rather Republican part of the country?
I would say yes. Everybody out here, at least in Idaho, is excited about Trump, and I would say that out here it is extremely Republican. I would even say a little bit right-wing extremist in some areas, depending on who you meet and who you talk to.
Your politics, Calvin, as we've discussed, are somewhat similar to mine. Independent, certainly conservative economically, but people issues, pro-choice, being a big one. It's do what you need to do. As America is founded upon freedom and individual rights, as long as they're done responsibly. Are you like myself and realize the parties have both of them, Democrat and Republican, have diverged too much? They've gone far left, gone far right. And as Americans, maybe we need a little more independent thinking, and we should go issue by issue instead of who's got the D and who's got the R.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, overall, I would probably consider myself more of a Republican than a Libertarian or Democrat, but I'm definitely conservative for most things, but when it comes to other people's lives and their choices, do what the hell you want, as long as it doesn't hurt anyone or hurt anything, you know? As long as you don't shove your beliefs down my throat.
Yeah, it's kind of, we believe, a responsible freedom, compassionate capitalism. Certainly there are different levels of that, but I would say capitalism, Calvin, by nature, is conservative. And if we look at some of the past presidents, Mary Ellen's previous boss, Mr. Bill Clinton, and she called him Bill. That was one of my questions that I asked her. So in honor of Mary Ellen, former president Bill, very conservative economically, and he balanced the budget. Let's take a look at that versus the current Democratic administration. It's not funny, obviously. It's very sad, but in a comparison, can't help but giggle a little bit. And Clinton being very fiscally conservative, certainly had some groundbreaking programs to balance the budget. And many people, including myself, were hoping that his wife, Hillary, would become a president. That doesn't look like it's going to happen, but she certainly will continue to have an influence, and certainly one of the most powerful, most educated, and intelligent first ladies ever. And let's hope that we can get this budget issue hammered down, because it certainly isn't hammered down right now. Take a look at, think what you want about the current administration, but numbers don't lie. And it's getting completely out of hand. And I'm scared for people your age, Calvin. What's going to happen in 10 to 20 years? How many zeros are we going to have to add to the end of this budget deficit? I would assume you kind of confer with me on that. And like myself, you consider Clinton a very good president. As a man, he certainly had his misgivings, but we don't expect perfection. But as a person who could balance the budget deficit, someone who could communicate well and seem presidential, do you agree with me that he is one of our best presidents in recent history? And at your age, with this increasing budget deficit, are you scared about where it's going to go, or do you think we can actually resolve this?
So I agree with everything you said. You pretty much hit the nail on the head there. And I'm definitely afraid for where this country is headed if things continue to trend the way that they currently are.
Okay, pretty much sums it up. Do you see this next election, Calvin, which will obviously be Mr. Biden, north of 80, and Donald Trump just south of 80, there are some good independent candidates. Matt has interviewed Chase Oliver, and you've listened to that interview, and I like what the guy has to say. He's in his 30s. He's very smart and well-spoken. He's, I would say, more libertarian than I am, but I do agree with enough that I would have no problem supporting him. I just don't see him as having much of a chance. I do like Kennedy. He isn't the most articulate guy in the world, but gotta love the bloodline. And he's obviously smart and has some good novel ideas. But bottom line is, Calvin, the next president will be either Trump making a return, just like Grover Cleveland did, or Joe Biden in his second term. Do you see this next election as the lesser of two evils, or is there a silver lining in either of these candidates?
I would say lesser of two evils at this point, but it would be nice if we had a libertarian or a independent president. It's just kind of like you kind of hinted at yourself. Third-party candidates always struggle with getting enough votes, which is unfortunate.
Right. We're both in states where we know the winner is going to be Trump. I would bet my life that Trump is going to win Idaho. Ohio, theoretically, Biden could win, but I wouldn't bet my life. I wouldn't bet $1 million. I don't have $1 million, but I'd bet a couple thousand dollars, let's say that, to confirm that Trump would win. I'll be a little different than Scott.
He'll probably win Idaho too.
Yeah. I think the chance that Trump will not win Idaho is, well, let me try. I can't really think of an analogy right now, but I'm sure I could come up with one. let's say, probably the same as the chance that Sam Donaldson is going to vote for Trump. And we know what Sam Donaldson thinks about Trump. And again, I won't say I agree with all of his politics, but I have enormous respect for him as a journalist. He's in his 90s, and he still sounds as great as he did 30, 40 years ago. So enormous respect for Sam.
And
I don't have to agree with his politics. I do agree with some of it. But he does speak what he has to say really well, and that's the most important. So I'll be a little unlike Scott. Well, he does do this sometimes, but let's, without further ado, may I ask you, Calvin, whom you plan, I assume you vote, you certainly are political, you have a sort of a political position at your job. May I ask you, whom are you going to vote for in November?
Honestly, with everything being the way it is at the moment, I can't give a definite answer on that at the moment.
Hope you don't mind me asking, but I thought I would mention that, like myself, you thought Chase Oliver had some good ideas, and he is really well-spoken. But we kind of understand that a vote for an independent candidate is essentially a vote for Trump. So as I'll let people know, I'm probably voting for Kennedy, and I don't put it past myself to vote for Oliver or possibly another alternative candidate. I wish Kennedy were a bit better spoken, but there are many things about him that I like, and gotta love the bloodline. And as I said, Trump is probably going to win Ohio. So instead of me voting for the lesser of two evils, maybe vote for someone that I like, who will get enough votes to show that people do care and have an interest in this candidate. But either way, there will be surprises in the election, just like there pretty much are every single time that folks go to the ballot. That's all part of the fun. Maybe next time we talk to Calvin, he can give a better answer as to whom he might vote for. But we really don't know. Do you agree, though, that the left has just gotten too far left, the right has gotten too far right, and we kind of need to feel that we're all Americans, we're all on the same team? And maybe what should be...
Yeah, I agree. We're far too divided.
As I said, Bill Clinton, and again, Hillary, I think her philosophies are very similar. If not, I think she's even more conservative economically, was certainly to the right economically. We don't have that currently, but he was a Democrat. So what made Clinton a Democrat? Well, he was pro-choice. We'd say he's pro-environment, but Richard Nixon was pro-environment, and he was a Republican. And Abraham Lincoln was a Republican. Now, that was a different time with different definitions of the parties, but you just look back literally two generations ago, Calvin, what were these differences? And we're seeing people, candidates with philosophies that appear to be more indicative of the other party. So what are these differences? And it's certainly rather a gray area. And that's kind of the way it should be. And now we have this incredible difference between what's on the left and what's on the right, including some very, very extreme ideas on both sides. So bottom line is, let's realize we're all on the same team. We're all Americans. We all love our country. It's okay to have differences, but we need to keep things within reason. Well, Calvin, I would like to thank you for being on the program with me. As my mama always said, time flies when you're having fun. We did want to talk a bit about COVID, but we'll save that for the next show because folks know how much I love to provide my opinions on that topic, and you also like to provide your opinions, so we'll just make sure people are in suspense, and we shall table that for a later time. With a couple of minutes left, any parting thoughts for our listeners?
So, one thing I've always found kind of interesting, historically, unions have always backed and endorsed Democrats. But if you look at my union, for example, or even, I guess I would say, most production environment unions out there, almost all the membership is Republicans.
That is a bit ironic. So you would say, if you were to ask which of your fellow union members, and this would be all ages, and again, we discussed it's mostly men, there are some women, and we'd like to see more women, as we'd like to see a diversity in demographics to get a better sample size and get a more accurate result. If you were to ask them, even though Democrats traditionally are the pro-union party, most of them would say Trump, or they would say, I'm not sure yet, or maybe an alternative candidate, but you wouldn't get a lot of Biden voters, is the bottom line.
No, not at all.
Well, isn't that an interesting thought? And on that note, we shall conclude the program. Calvin Williams from Lewiston, Idaho, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to be on the program with us. We will probably have you back at a later time. Adam Lepp here, your host and person who performs many duties here at this great talk radio station. Adam at WWGH1071.com.